Welcome to the RWE conference call on fiscal 2010 with Dr. Jürgen Grossmann and Dr. Rolf Pohlig. I will now hand over to Stefan Lovis.
Thanks, Simone. Good afternoon. Our full year's results for the first time just as a conference call instead of a full conference. This brings us in line with our operational business to become more and more efficient. However, we hope to see you most of you personally over the next couple of weeks during our roadshow season. Also, later this year, in between our quarterly results, we intend to organize a field trip to take you to our DEA and energy operations in northern Germany. But now to our strategy update. Jürgen, please.
Thank you, Stefan, and good afternoon to everyone who has joined us today via telephone or webcast. Today's presentation is showing stark contrasts. While we achieved record earnings in 2010, we have challenging years lying ahead of us. These not only make a repeat of last year's performance very hard to achieve, but have also required us to review our midterm targets. But rest assured, this is not a general downward trend. There is a cycle, and we manage through the cycle. We have initiated measures and set up our strategy to ensure that the company is well placed to defend its market positions and benefit from the opportunities of a changing environment. In the first part of this presentation, I will outline how we steer RWE through the challenges of our present environment while not losing sight of the longer-term future and growth of the company. Rolf will then guide you through last year's results and provide some additional details on our divisional outlook. Finally, before we answer your questions, I will provide you the short and midterm outlook for the group. Let us first briefly review the very successful year just gone by. We outperformed our financial targets, which were growing EBITDA by 5-10% and operating result at recurrent net income by 5%. All divisions, with the exception of trading and gas midstream, showed at least a double-digit earnings growth. With the conclusion of the integration of Essent, we are well on track to achieve our synergy targets. We also progressed our plans for a more efficient organization by streamlining the group center and by pooling our German sales and distribution businesses. Our Central Eastern and Southeastern Europe division is now steered by the newly established RWE East, domiciled in Prague. Our CapEx program is well advanced. We commissioned two CCGTs plants in Lingen, Northern Germany, and Staythorpe, Great Britain, and started the construction of another one in Denizli, Turkey. RWE Innogy has taken major steps to prepare for the construction of its Nordsee Ost and Gwinty Moor offshore wind farms. By the end of 2010, the first turbines had already started generating electricity at the Greater Gabbert offshore wind farm. Our upstream division, RWE DEA, continued on its successful exploration track record. Major project developments are on their way in the UK, Norway, and Egypt. Let me briefly explain our view on the current situation in Egypt and Libya. Egypt is an important country for RWE DEA, even more so in the years to come after the significant gas findings in the western offshore Nile Delta. However, our exposure is limited, as so far the country contributes less than 10% to RWE DEA's operating result. We also trust that the new government in Egypt will keep the reliable investment in environment, not the least because our production is mainly intended for the Egyptian market. Let me also update you. The situation is stabilizing significantly, and we have begun to send back our expats to Egypt. So, no disruptive development there is to be expected. With respect to Libya, we are developing oil and gas fields and two concessions. We have taken action and flew our employees and their relatives home. On the next slide, you see the major challenges lying ahead of us. These are also the reasons why we do not expect 2011 to repeat the level of earnings recorded in 2010. Ladies and gentlemen, a year ago, we faced an uncertain economic recovery. On the one hand, our fears turned out to be largely unfounded. The economy, especially in Germany, proved to be more resilient than expected. However, on the other hand, the repercussions of the recession are still being felt by the utilities industry. Increasing energy demand on the back of a colder than average winter has not yet led to significant improvement of electricity prices or spreads. The continued construction of generation capacity, above all the unexpected, perhaps even unforeseeable, expansion of solar PV, photovoltaic, is one of the major reasons for this. In addition to this already challenging environment in the generation market, political conditions have also become much less reliable. The German government's decision to introduce a tax on nuclear fuel is the most prominent example. The decoupling of oil and gas prices, resulting in a negative gas-to-oil spread, is a result of the demand-supply imbalance mainly caused by the economic crisis in addition to U.S. shale gas production and discoveries. While other countries are shying away from firm commitments in the face of economic uncertainties, Europe is still committed to its ambitious CO2 targets. We therefore have to brace ourselves for the tighter CO2 regime from 2013 onwards. But this is not new to us and comes as expected. However, some smart, or should I say smarter nations, like the Netherlands, are introducing cost efficiency considerations into their plan for a greener economy, i.e. how much greenhouse gas abatement can you get for each euro spent. Against this backdrop, we must not just continue with business as usual. We incorporated these new realities in our business plan, reviewed our strategy, and decided on measures to mitigate the financial impact without harming the future of RWE. First and foremost, we didn't see any reasons why we should change our strategy. We stick to our guns, taking advantage of our regional expertise, process know-how, and positioning in our existing and growth markets. Our CO2 mitigation strategy is still key to making us more competitive. Our organic growth ambitions will focus on renewables and upstream. Both activities will show on average double-digit earnings growth over the next years. However, the nuclear fuel tax affects our overall earnings and therefore also our financial headroom and investment budget. We reduced our existing CapEx program by approximately 3 billion euros and stepped up our existing 1.2 billion euros efficiency enhancement program by another 200 million euros by 2012. In addition, we have already taken steps to make our asset portfolio more suitable to the changed environment. Such initiatives include the renegotiation of our gas procurement contracts and the ability to increase the flexibility of our power plants. Finally, strategic and operational measures have to tie in with balanced financial targets. Therefore, we are also reviewing our portfolio for potential disposals and are planning to divest assets of up to 8 billion euros by 2013. In this process, we are looking at the most value-preserving measures to keep our financial flexibility. Potential assets disposals will be analyzed and their financial merits scrutinized on a case-by-case basis. This is the reason why we cannot provide you with a definite list of disposal candidates today. But rest assured that we will also consider the impact on the future development and growth of the group as a whole in this process. We also do not necessarily have to dispose of one large single asset to achieve our target. We could also look at the sale of minority stakes or the inclusion of partners in certain investment projects. Please understand that today we are not able to provide you with more detail on this. We maintain our current dividend policy. Together with the commitment to support a solid A rating, we believe this keeps the interest of our various stakeholders balanced and maintains our financial flexibility for long-term growth. Let me also answer one of your burning questions. Our current midterm plan does at this time not include a capital increase. Many of you will know the picture on slide 7, which regularly features in a number of our reports and presentations. After thorough consideration, we are not proposing a revolution. We are convinced of the strength of our core businesses and will stick to our focused regional strategy in Europe. Here we can build on our leading market positions, technical skills and expertise, as well as our familiarity with the economic and regulatory environment. We try to avoid ventures into unknown territory, such as other continents, as we would rather put our experience to use in familiar surroundings. Our current markets offer attractive investment opportunities. Central Eastern and Southeastern Europe present additional growth prospects, which we intend to pursue in the medium term. Most of you are already familiar with our CO2 mitigation strategy, which remains key to the competitiveness of RWE. We maintain our target of reducing our CO2 intensity to market average by 2020. We are working on physical as well as financial mitigation measures to achieve this goal. A most recent example for financial measures is a deal we signed at the end of last year with a big industrial client. We sold 300 megawatts of lignite capacity for 15 years, where the client takes the cost for the required CO2 certificates. This deal alone hedges approximately 2.6 million tons per annum of our CO2 procurement requirements and lowers our economic exposure significantly. Last year, we provided you with the details of the CO2 mitigation measures. These can be found in the backup slides. However, the near-term challenge is full auctioning of CO2 certificates from 2013 onwards. We won't be able to fully compensate for that financial burden stemming from the purchase of some additional 100 million tons of CO2 certificates in 2013. However, we have laid the foundation for growth projects which will more than make up for the negative impact beyond 2013. Ladies and gentlemen, from strategy, now let's move on to execution. Let me start with our new medium-term investment program. Including the impact of planned portfolio divestments, we intend to spend approximately 18 billion over the next 3 years, mainly on our large power plants and infrastructure projects. These projects are well advanced, and we're working hard to bring them on stream as soon as possible. This is the reason why we will see an increase in our capital spending of up to 1 billion euros in the current year. However, this will be the peak of our investment cycle. For 2012 and 2013, we expect investments to come down significantly to approximately 5 billion euros. Compared to last year's plan for 2011 to 2013, we have cut back our investments by approximately 3 billion in response to the tougher market conditions. The reduction in CapEx is mainly a result of lower investments in conventional power generation in northwestern Europe, as we don't want to miss out on opportunities in our growth areas of renewables and upstream gas and oil. With our investment program, we are laying the foundation for future earnings growth. More than 50% will be spent on growth projects or to enhance our efficiency. In addition, it will support our target to grow the business outside of Germany. Once operational, we expect these projects to contribute approximately 1.2 billion euros of EBITDA and 0.9 billion euros of operating result. But please bear in mind, developing offshore wind farms or new gas fields takes time. As a response to the tougher financial environment, we have increased the hurdle rates for new investment projects despite lower average cost of capital. This ensures that RWE will concentrate on the most attractive opportunities. Ladies and gentlemen, Now let's focus on the specific growth areas of RWE. One, of course, is our renewables business. RWE Innogy continues with an ambitious investment program, which also plays a major role in our CO2 mitigation strategy. The acquisition of Essent did not only bring excellent power stations and a solid customer base in the Netherlands to RWE, we also inherited a well-advanced project pipeline in renewables. We refocused our development plans on some larger, fully consented projects and postponed some smaller ones. This has, of course, together with CapEx cuts, some impact on RWE Innogy's growth targets. With a focus now on offshore wind projects, which are more time-consuming, we have to postpone our capacity target. We now expect to have 4.5 gigawatts in operation or under construction in 2014, 2 years later than originally envisaged. This corresponds to an operating result of approximately 500 million euros. Let me emphasize, this is only the first milestone. We plan for significant further growth in the years thereafter. It is also worthwhile mentioning that we expect RWE Innogy's result to exceed its cost of capital by 2016. Excluding the significant startup costs of such a young and capital-intensive business, and assuming normalized weather conditions, we expect operational projects to make a positive value contribution in 2011. Now to our other field of growth, RWE DEA. In recent years, our upstream division has been very successful in its exploration effort. The focus has now moved from exploration to the development of these discoveries. We've seen several major field developments underway and, as with any large investment project, due to CapEx shifts or further project optimization, delays can occur. However, these have not necessarily to be considered negatively. For example, in the case of larger volumes found through ongoing exploration, further analysis might be needed and the development concept needs to be revised. At the end, there might be a delay, but it should result in higher production figures and better earnings, which I consider quite positive. As a consequence, RWE DEA will achieve its production and earnings target slightly later than envisaged. We now target oil and gas production of 70 million barrels of oil equivalent in 2016 with an operating result of roughly 1 billion euros. We have good indications for further growth potential of up to 90 million barrels of oil equivalent per year in a couple of years later. Ladies and gentlemen, in 2010, the German market recorded a year of considerable growth in renewable capacity. Photovoltaic, i.e. solar, was an especially strong contributor to that. I don't want to bore you with the arguments about how uneconomical this is. You're all aware of the facts. There will be massive additional capacity coming onto the system. Only very little, between 10 and 20%, of this capacity can be considered reliable to cover demand at any given time. As a result, the need for conventional power plants to provide the so-called swing capacity will increase dramatically. The current system requires a good 30 gigawatts, which is covered by today's generation fleet, but one can expect this to grow up to 50 gigawatts in 2020 and even more thereafter. The positive thing is tight markets will provide good opportunities for operators who own flexible plants. This is the reason why we have started a program to further upgrade the flexibility of our generation fleet. We also believe that competitive markets are to be favored over regulated capacity markets. Experience gained in other European countries is not convincing. In the existing market model, price signals will indicate necessary investments in new generation capacity, even if renewables continue to expand. These signals will trigger timely decisions by potential investors if policymakers create clear and reliable framework conditions and do not interfere in the price formation process, allowing price spikes as necessary market signals. The strong increase in renewables will take out demand for conventional power plants. But in times of low wind levels and no sun, there has to be capacity to back up the system. Let me mention on this occasion that we are now in the third consecutive year of low wind levels, 30% below the long-term average. On one hand, this conventional capacity will grow by some 40 gigawatts, which is going online by 2013-2014. Thereafter, we don't expect any further additional conventional new build capacity to be realized for a considerable time. The last project was announced in 2008. Since then, we've only seen cancellations. On the other hand, some 4 gigawatts will go out of the system in the short term or has already left the system, as a lot of the new build projects are replacement plants. You might remember that even in RWE, our new lignite BOA plant is replacing 16 old lignite blocks of 150 megawatts each. As a consequence, we have decided not to exercise the option to prolong 1.4 gigawatts of our STEAG contracts. They will phase out in 2012. Of course, these plants will still be in the market until their owner decides what to do with them. On the back of current market conditions, we see approximately 8 gigawatts of additional inflexible hard coal plants struggling hard to even cover their full cost. In case the current market conditions prevail, we would assume that the bulk of these plants will go out of the system if their operators behave rationally. Recent debt finance acquisitions of generation portfolios should put additional pressure on acquirers to behave with sense. As a consequence of the tough industry environment, we have stepped up RWE's efficiency program. The original program of 1.2 billion per annum for 2012 compared to 2006 is well on track. On top of this, we want to produce another 200 million of cost savings by 2012. Please be aware that this is already net of any cost increases, with the exception of higher fuel costs. These additional measures are mainly referring to programs to cut overhead costs. In addition, we will introduce a new IT system in our UK division. These will bring significant changes to our operations, making processes more efficient and reducing the numbers of staff required. So much for my first part. With this, I would like to hand over to Rolf.
Thank you, Jürgen. Before I provide you with the divisional performance, let me give you a brief overview of the group's key performance indicators. External revenue is up 12%, mainly due to the first-time consolidation of Ascent. EBITDA and the operating result were up 12 and 8% respectively. This is more than we originally expected in our outlook in February last year. Jürgen mentioned already that all divisions, except Trading Gas Midstream, were strongly contributing to this. In addition, we experienced one-off effects in the other consolidation line, mainly from the release of provisions in the magnitude of 200 million euros. The non-operating result was dominated by the impact of changes in the value of commodity derivatives. The financial result improved by 3%. This is mainly due to a more favorable other financial result. The effective tax rate dropped from 33% to 28% in part because our corporate tax credit rose and we were able to capitalize loss carry-forwards. As a result, net income declined by 7%. But if we adjust for non-recurrent items, recurrent net income, the basis for the dividend, was up by 6%. This is also slightly ahead of our outlook from February last year. Now on to our divisional performance, starting with RWE Power. Its operating result improved by 17% to a record level of 4 billion euros. Slide 18 gives you the individual value drivers. For 2011, we are less optimistic for obvious reasons. Our German generation business will be hit for the first time by the introduction of the nuclear fuel tax. We expect a burden of approximately 400 million euros. average realized electricity prices will fall behind last year's high level of 67 euros per megawatt hour. In 2011, our Biblis A nuclear power plant will be offline for approximately 6 months and Biblis B for approximately 3 months. As a result, the earnings contribution of Biblis will fall behind the 2010 level and we have to incur costs for retrofit measures. However, the impact from the change in nuclear and mining provisions will have a positive effect. This is mainly due to the absence of costs we had in 2010. Coming to our customary update on our forward selling position. At the end of fiscal year 2010, we had sold more than 90% for 2011, more than 50% for 2012, and more than 10% for 2013. Although we saw some recovery of electricity prices at the beginning of the year, current price levels are far below the high prices we saw 2 to 3 years ago. The strong increase in renewable volumes has particularly put pressure on peak load prices. As a result, the clean dark and spark spreads are levels which are too low to justify operation of old, inefficient power plants. Jürgen mentioned already in his presentation that old and expensive plants might leave the system if prices stay so low for longer. Our sales and distribution network business area closed 16% above the previous year. The division benefited from efficiency measures. Volumes in our German distribution network business increased due to the economic recovery. Lower costs for grid losses had a positive impact as well. However, the business area was hit by the refund of excess proceeds, the famous Mehrerlösabschöpfung. In the sales business, gas volumes increased mainly because of the cold weather, while electricity margins declined. We expect the operating result for 2011 to fall below the previous year. This is mainly a result of higher OPEX for improving the quality of our distribution network business. The costs for refunding excess proceeds will be slightly lower than in 2010. For the sales business, we expect lower gas volumes, assuming normalized weather conditions. Now on to our new Netherlands-Belgium division. The numbers for 2010 are substantially affected by consolidation effects. The performance of the Netherlands-Belgium division was supported by higher gas sales due to the cold winter and slightly higher customer account numbers. Earnings were negatively affected by the transfer of the Eemshaven power plant project from RWD Power to Essent. The accumulated upfront costs of approximately 25 million euros are now reflected in this division. With regard to 2011, we expect the operating result to come down significantly. This is mainly a result of the integration of the gas midstream business into RWD Supply and Trading. In 2010, the gas midstream margin, which was supported by the cold winter weather, was still reported in the Netherlands-Belgium division. Lower electricity generation spreads will have a negative impact as well. However, the division will benefit from efficiency improvements and additional synergies. Let me continue with RWD Npower. Operating result was up by 10%, adjusted for forex effects, it increased by 6%. The increase is mainly linked to our retail business, where we benefited from our efficiency programs and from improved residential gas demand over the cold winter month. On the downside, we faced increased costs for bad debt this year. The performance of our generation business was affected by the adverse market conditions for our hard coal plants. This could only partially be offset by higher production volumes of our gas-fired plants, including our new CCGT in Stathorpe, and lower operating costs. RWE Npower's extensive cost and efficiency programs also helped to stabilize earnings in a difficult market environment. For the year 2011, we anticipate an increase in RWE Npower's operating result due to an increased operational performance program across all business segments. In the retail business, we expect a return to profitable margins in the residential segment as a result of improvement of our commodity cost management. The generation business will benefit from full contribution of our new gas plant at Stathorpe. However, the deterioration of generation spreads will further suppress overall performance of this business. Operating earnings at our Central Eastern and Southeastern Europe division climbed by 11%, supported by positive forex effects. Adjusted for FX effects, the division posted an increase of 7%. One major factor were improvements in our Czech gas network and sales business. However, we suffered from declining volumes with distributors. In addition, we had a positive contribution from our Polish activities, among other things, due to efficiency improvements. In Hungary, improved electricity network margins were more than offset by lower electricity generation margins and the introduction of a special tax. For 2011, we expect operating results to be down significantly year on year compared to the exceptionally high number of 2010. In the Czech Republic, we expect gas sales margins to come down, as well as earnings from gas storage activities. The contribution from our Hungarian electricity activities is also expected to fall behind last year's level. However, we expect to see higher electricity network margins in Poland. The operating result of our renewables division improved by 29%. The first-time consolidation of the Ascend wind assets contributed 23 million euros to earnings. We explained in our earlier calls that this is less than originally expected because of the very weak production volumes due to low wind levels in northwestern Europe. The commissioning of our Royal Flats offshore wind farm and the consolidation of Danta de Energías for a full year had a positive effect. Upfront costs for a large investment program, including higher staff costs, are still dampening Innogy's operating result. For 2011, we expect Adria Energy to post strong earnings increase. We will see further results of our expansion program. But upfront costs for our project, including higher staff costs, are still offsetting parts of this. In addition, we assume normalized wind levels compared to the very weak conditions in 2010. Upstream Gas and Oil reported a 50% increase in operating earnings. This is mainly a result of higher oil prices, a stronger US dollar, as well as reduced exploration costs. In addition, we benefited from lower royalties in the German business. However, DEA suffered from reduced gas prices and lower production volumes. We see significant further upside potential for 2011. RWE expects improved oil and gas prices. We anticipate a higher oil production, while gas volumes will decline due to the natural depletion in our German and UK fields. In addition, we expect exploration costs to come down further. The operating result in our trading gas midstream division turned into a slight negative number in the year under review. On the one hand, the mark-to-market performance of the trading business was good, but fell below the very high level of fiscal 2009. On the other hand, we benefited from the first-time consolidation of the Ascend trading activities, which contributed 96 million euros in 2010. The steep decline is mainly related to our gas supply activities. This is because of two major items. First, in 2009, we successfully concluded price revisions, which led to a triple-digit one-off release of provisions. Second, prices on the gas market dropped relative to oil links purchase contracts, as slide 49 in our backups indicate. This is also the reason why we see the operating result in 2011 falling significantly below the level of 2010, despite an expected stable development for our trading activities. Let me take the opportunity to update you on the situation for our gas supply business. This slide, number 27, will be familiar to you, but the numbers have changed slightly. Our original 27 BCM take-or-pay exposure has come down to 24 BCM as some smaller contracts phased out. As indicated to you in our recent presentations, the net exposure temporarily grows to 20 BCM as more and more sales contracts have turned from oil indexation to market prices, especially in the Czech Republic. However, with the current prices and contract renegotiations underway, we would expect the oil index take-or-pay exposure to come down significantly in the coming years. Slide 28 gives you an overview about the maturity profile of our gas supply contracts and the status of our revision talks. As of January 2011, we are in negotiations for a good two-thirds or 17 BCM of our long-term supply contracts. I already mentioned our interim updates last year that we would not expect a quick conclusion of these negotiations. For many contracts, we are already going into formal arbitration processes to settle our demands and expect to do likewise for the rest. Although we are ahead of other midstream companies, the bulk of refund will most likely only come in 2012 and 2013. However, as we started the process to fundamentally restructure these contracts much earlier than most and have not accepted any temporary quick fixes, we expect any good news also to show retroactive effects for parts of the volumes from the years 2009 and 2010. However, you should always keep in mind that price renegotiations and arbitration processes or market developments of seismic shifts have never happened in Europe before, and therefore precise outcomes are hard to predict. Please understand that as long as we are in negotiations, we cannot be more explicit. The non-operating result fell below last year's number by 1.3 billion euros. This was driven by the earnings impact of commodity derivatives. Please remember that all the numbers we show in this line are purely timing differences. Restructuring other fell by approximately 240 million euros. This is mainly driven by three effects. The deteriorated market conditions for UK hard coal and oil-fired power plants forced an impairment of 296 million euros. Secondly, last year, 2009, we recognized an impairment loss on our equity participation Accelerate. And thirdly, in 2009, we still had a positive contribution from the change in nuclear mining provisions. Since 2010, these changes are accounted for in the operating result. Ladies and gentlemen, over the last weeks, we have been asked whether we would have to incur an impairment on our Dutch and or British assets against a backdrop of deteriorated market conditions. With regard to our Dutch business, yes, the conditions are much more difficult short-term than it seemed at the time of the acquisition. Nevertheless, you have seen from the 2010 annual accounts that the impairment test did not result in a goodwill or asset impairment. With regard to our UK business, I just mentioned the value adjustment on our generation assets. Beyond this, the impairment test did not show any need for further steps. More details on our impairment test for 2010 can be found in the annual report on pages 187 and 88. There were no major changes in the development of the financial result compared to the trend we discussed on our Q3 call in November last year. Please note, the interest charges for the hybrid bond that we issued in September last year are not reflected in the financial result. According to IFRS, it is 100% equity, and the interest charges are accounted for directly in shareholders' equity. In line with the approach taken by the credit rating agencies, we add 50% of the bond to our net debt. For the same reason, we include the post-tax interest charge for the hybrid in both our net income and recurrent net income. Now on to our cash flow statement. Cash flows from operating activities increased by 200 million euros to 5.5 billion. This is predominantly a result of two items. First, funds from operations climbed by 1.8 billion euros. The positive operating earnings trend was the main reason. Second, the change in working capital had a negative effect of 1.6 billion euros compared to 2009. This is primarily result of the change in variation margins. CapEx on fixed assets climbed by 500 million euros. This is partly because we included the investments made by Ascent for a full year in 2010. All in all, free cash flow was therefore 300 million euros below the level of 2009. Before we start with your questions, a few words on our debt situation. We are committed to a strong rating. Our target to maintain our solid A rating remains in place, although we recognize the challenges ahead of us. The major tool to monitor our indebtedness is the leverage factor. In 2010, we managed to be below our threshold of 3.0 times net debt to EBITDA, but we expect the factor to surpass this level in 2011. We have already initiated several measures to bring it down again, below our target over the medium term. The most important ones are portfolio investments of up to 8 billion in 2011 to 2013. We have already seen smaller deals like the disposal of ThyssenGas, which we envisage to close by the end of this month, or the disposal of our 24.6% stake in the Rostock hard coal plant. We also know that we are evaluating options with regard to financial investors as potential partners for our electricity transfer business. Further assets will follow, but it's too early to talk about details. The second measure to support our rating was reduction of CapEx. Compared to our old program, we have reduced the capital spending for the next 3 years by approximately 3 billion euros. Nevertheless, due to the disposal proceeds, we still have enough funds available to grow our renewables and upstream businesses. Jürgen also updated you on our efficiency program, which we have stepped up by 200 million by 2012. Last but not least, we have initiated a program to optimize our trade working capital. We would expect a benefit of several hundred million euros from this by 2013. In addition, and in order to enlarge our toolbox, we are going to ask the AGM in April to change our corporate bylaws for potential dividend in kind in the future. We will then have the option to use our treasury shares for a scrip dividend. Whether and when we might make use of this option will be analyzed and decided at a later stage. We are convinced that with these measures we will be able to support our solid rating. Before we start with the questions, I would like to hand back to Jürgen for the outlook.
Thank you, Rolf. Please bear in mind 2010 brought RWE a historic peak, which regrettably cannot be repeated in the near term. EBITDA and operating result are more than 40% above the level of 2005, for example. Our dividend has doubled since then. For 2011, we are optimistic that it will be a good year, but due to the current challenges we are facing, not as excellent as 2010. EBITDA and operating result are expected to come down by approximately 15 and 20% respectively. The decline for recurrent net income is expected to be approximately 30%. What are our expectations midterm for 2013? Earnings will be affected as a result of low commodity prices and the full auctioning of carbon certificates. The portfolio divestments of up to 8 billion euros are expected to lower our EBITDA in 2012 and 2013 by approximately 1 billion euros, operating result by approximately 0.7 billion, and recurrent net income by approximately 0.3 billion euros. As a consequence, EBITDA is expected to be in the area of 8 billion euros, operating result around 5 billion euros, and recurrent net income in the magnitude of 2 billion euros. These are our expectations on the basis of the market parameters as of January 2011, or one could say mark to market. The 2013 German forward price for baseload went up by some 3 euros to nearly 55 euros per megawatt hour over the last couple of days, which of course is helpful for our future profits. If you figure that in with the 160 terawatt hours we are selling, 60 are dependent on the spreads. 100 terawatt hours are just basically nuclear and lignite, and each euro would transform into about 100 million result, disregarding the gas to oil spread. We believe that the expected performance in 2013 is quite an achievement. Despite the substantial additional cost for 2013 from full auctioning, we expect an EBITDA that is actually higher than for 2011 on a like-for-like basis. This will be achieved by all the measures that are outlined before, supported by our focused growth strategy for energy and DEA. Our guidance indicates also that the trough of the current cycle will be shorter, somewhere mid-term rather than long-term. This, of course, cannot be a promise because, frankly, our crystal ball is no better than yours. But we think that there are some good arguments for such an assessment. First, the situation on the generation markets can't persist for long. All generators have to readjust their portfolio. We also expect that the influence on increased power generation from renewables will start showing bigger effects. The lack of flexible capacity in conventional generation will be positive for our business. Second, the European gas market is already in a transition phase. Current negative spreads can also not persist forever. But don't get me wrong, these developments might need some years to resolve, but definitely not decades. Third, this outlook reflects all the challenges appropriately, leaving room for future upside. Where do we see this upside? I mentioned already that we expect significant growth potential post-2013 from our investment program at Innogy and DEA. The full earnings contribution of our large investment projects, CapEx projects that is, will also only come in 2013 or even partly later. For the later years, we also expect commodity prices to pick up again. Further, we are confident that our gas to oil spread exposure will be largely gone beyond 2013, as price reviews will have to bring these long-term contracts back in line with wholesale prices. This is the core principle of contracts. They have to reflect market realities. So what can you expect from RWE for the next years? Our financial targets are threefold: balancing the interests of all stakeholders and providing good prospects for the company once we have come through this cycle. First, we keep an attractive dividend by sharing at least half of our recurrent net income with our shareholders. Second, we are laying the foundation for future growth, especially in renewables and upstream. And third, with our commitment to a solid A credit rating, we keep our options open for long-term growth. Let me clearly point out, we focus on the interest of all our stakeholders. There is no prioritization of one group over the other. After the experience of the financial crisis, it is fair to say that a solid rating is in the interest of shareholders as well. With this, I would like to hand over to Stefan to start with your questions and direct them accordingly.
Thank you, Jürgen, and thank you, Rolf. Before we start with your questions, I would like to introduce a new member of our IR team. Judith Heise is our new dedicated fixed income contact. Judith previously worked in several functions within the RWE group in Germany and abroad. Among other things, she held positions in risk controlling and strategy. And now to your questions, and the common rule, only two questions only. And with this, I would like to hand over to Simone to open up the round of questions.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. Your questions will be answered in the order they are received. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question comes from Peter Wirtz from WestLB. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. Two questions. So the first one, you seem to be a bit shy regarding your giving details on your disposal program, but I tried. In terms of the asset disposal worth 8 billion, you say up to 8 billion. Is there any potential to size it down once you see a faster than expected earnings revival in 2012-13? Or is there a potential to see some additional opportunities in Southeastern Europe, which means switching some assets via disposal from Northwestern Europe to Southeastern Europe?
Well, let's try to answer this jointly between Rolf and me. First of all, of up to 8 billion or approximately 8 billion, well, you never know what the value of an asset is when you put it on the market, so we cannot be 100% sure how much we realize. Second, this figure is not chiseled in stone, so we are flexible, i.e. if the future comes a little better than we have as a base of our calculations today, then of course we can reduce this. Rolf, do you want to add something?
No, I think there's nothing too bad. It's exactly as you just outlined.
Okay, next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Mr. Patrick Hummel from UBS Investment.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen, and thanks for taking my questions. Two, please. The first one regarding the balance sheet structure situation. I mean, based on your guidance for 2013 in terms of earnings and disposals, the economic net debt number versus EBITDA is still more than 3 times. And if I got that right, you basically would not rule out to use the treasury shares to improve the situation here. So my question is, should we be prepared for an additional EPS dilution that goes on top of the disposals? Is that a fair assumption at this point? And the second question is regarding your underlying assumptions in the gas trading business for your 2011 and 13 guidance. For 11, have you incorporated basically the worst case, i.e. no success in arbitration and renegotiations till the end of this year? And in 2013, are we back to zero or a small profit, or what's the underlying assumption there? Thank you.
Well, first, for the first Rolf, for the first part, the dilution, I will enlarge on the assumed result of the negotiations.
Patrick, I will not comment on the calculation you just made, but I think what we said is that we are looking for coming back to 3.0, even below midterm. And yes, you are so far right, as we are in the peak of our investment cycle and we'll need some time to come down and then be in alignment with the 3.0 target.
Okay, but that basically means you still need to discuss with the rating agencies whether that disposal target will be sufficient or whether you would have to sell treasury shares, for example.
We have started that debate. We have informed them about the current status, and we will have the more detailed debates with them, I think, in April.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, as for the result of the price adjustments with the long-term gas suppliers, we do not assume anything for the years 11 and 12. That doesn't mean that we don't want to conclude these negotiations, but that a financial income will only be from 13 onwards.
Okay, so just to be clear, for 11, this assumes basically the worst case that could happen in the gas business, and then in 13 it would be back to normalized levels.
I think it's fair to say that we have included for 2012 some positive outcomes of that,
but the bulk
in 2013.
13, yeah. Sorry, I was wrong.
Okay.
CFO is right.
Thanks very much.
Okay, next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Vincent Gill from Credit Suisse.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Vincent here. It's not Vincent, but anyway. Can you take us through two things? The first one is on the capacity cuts. You're nearly the first company to actually come out of the woodwork and start talking officially about capacity cuts. I would be interested to understand what the overall picture, according to you, could be. You've been very cautious in the numbers you've been advancing, but it would be interesting if you could develop a bit. The second question is on the hedging strategy. Obviously, you're less hedged going into 2011 than you were in the past, year plus one, year plus two, etc. Could you just, maybe it's for Rolf, maybe just help us understand how you are going to try to capture higher prices in the next 18 months, given that for the time being you still have a fairly open position? Thank you very much.
Vincent, first of all, I mean, after Peter Wirtz called us shy, now you call us cautious. So these are all, I would say, positive properties. I like to be called shy and cautious. Now, as to capacity cuts, so far we've only specified that we are not going to prolong the contracts with STEAG beyond 2012. And also we're looking at some hard coal capacity in Germany, that is some older stations that are probably, if we analyze the market situation, if the current market situation prevails, that are probably redundant at that time. So we are not specifying what capacity cuts we will make, just the 1.4 gigawatts that we don't prolong from STEAG is the number that's presently on the table. On the other hand, we will take out a production corresponding to the commissioning of our new lignite power plants, 16 blocks of 150 megawatts each, so the lignite capacity does not increase with the commissioning of the new power plant.
With respect to the overall hedging, I think that is not significantly different to that what we have seen in the past. I think you cannot only compare with the previous year, but I have here in front of me statistics over the last several years, and we start this year with a 90% hedge for 2011, and that is almost exactly the same figure we provided some 12 months ago for 2010, 2 years ago for 2009, and so on. And with respect for the follow-on year, that is this year for 2012, that is in excess of 50%, and in previous year we had it anywhere between more than 35 and 70%, and with respect to the two-year forward hedging, currently, as I mentioned, is more than 10% for the 2 years ahead, and we have that in the past anywhere between 10 and 30%. So it is not a significant deviation from the overall hedge pass which we use in the company overall. And perhaps you remember that hedge pass is to a large extent also dominated by the liquidity in the marketplace for this kind of contracts.
But what do you think is the best strategy going forward in the current market environment? Just continue or...
You see, we had looked on this from time to time whether there's additional benefit via accelerating or deferring some of the hedges, but the outcome of all the debate was simply to move forward on a straight line.
Okay.
And please don't forget, we have such a high market share in the domestic generation market. If we really would dramatically change a hedge path, irrespective of liquidity available in the market, that may lead to some criticism by the antitrust authorities.
I'm sure. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks. Next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Bobby Chader from Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good afternoon. My two questions are, first of all, on the 200 million of additional cost cutting. Can you give a little color as to some of the areas that may come from? And secondly, back to the oil-gas spread question, I'm afraid. You seem to imply that the midstream gas business would have bigger losses in 2011 than in 2010. Is that because more customers have opted to take spot-based pricing, or is it simply due to your hedges that you had put in place rolling off in 2011?
Okay, Bobby. As to the 200 million, this is mainly an overhead, and it concerns our IT divisions, our central service divisions, the headquarters at the UK business. Now, all these contribute to those 200 million. They are very realistic. They are concrete measures, and people have been identified that will change their jobs. And we can show you where the efficiency improvement comes from.
But with respect to the second question, I think I mentioned that we see an increase of the net exposure I think last year we mentioned that the next exposure is in the 16 BCM range, and that, based on our assumptions, is going into the 20 BCM range, and that is due to the fact that customers are switching to pure gas prices away from oil index prices, and that has an impact here.
Great, thank you.
Okay, next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Matthias Heck from Macquarie.
Hi, good afternoon. I got two questions. Firstly, Dr. Kaufmann, you pointed out that commodity prices are rather volatile these days. Could you please run us through the main 2013 assumptions for power prices, coal, CO2 and gas? And the second question, you pointed out that that older hard coal stations are not profitable in the current environment of low clean dark spreads. In your 2013 guidance, do you assume a negative operating profits for year older hard coal stations, or have you already assumed that they are going to shut down a couple of these, given your clean dark spread assumptions in your outlook? Thank you.
Well, Matthias, thank you for those questions. Now, as I said, we used, so to say, a mark-to-market approach as per January 2011, which means that the German electricity base price is 52 euros in 11, 51 euros in 12, and 52 euros in 13. Peak is 63, 64. And the carbon price is 15, 15, 16. That is, I think, what you were asking. Now, are you asking for oil or what?
Essentially, also hard coal and the gas TTF price.
I think, Matthias, we just can say it's mark to market of January prices. Yeah. So if you look to your Bloomberg screen, take the prices, then you are in the number in the range where we put the assumptions on.
And that only reflects the open positions we still had at this point in time.
Of course.
Can you just remind us on the second question? It was about Hamm, or was it wasn't?
No, not for the brand new, but rather for the older power plant.
He was asking whether, I think, Matthias, what we have to observe is how the total market develops. You know, it's not only what we do. I think we are quite flexible, and we have a few stations where our obligation to operate them expires at the end of 12. So let's see what the rest of the pack is doing. And we can then decide at the time when that need to decision-making comes. But we will definitely not hesitate to close down older hard coal capacity.
Okay, but right now your 2013 guidance implies that you are not yet shutting down the older power stations under your control.
No, it implies only, I think, for the one in the Saar.
Okay.
That's for Enstorf. That implies that.
Matthias, as you know us so well, we always told the market it's in principle a replacement plant, and we earmark to close Hamm, but we haven't yet announced any specific date on that.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
But it assumes that we will not continue with the Steag contract. That's what we mentioned.
Yeah, that's understood.
Okay. Thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ingo Becker from Kepler Capital Markets.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon. I have two questions. One on your 13 guidance. Could you let us know how much of the entire CapEx program that you've been running, which I think was 28 billion before, and now it is 25 billion if I deduct the 3 billion reduction, how much of that will contribute EBIT post your 13 figures for operating result and recurrent, i.e. how much of the CapEx is by 30 not in your figures, and is your cost-cutting target, all your cost-cutting targets in the 2013 profit guidance? And a second question I had on Steag is, If I understand you correctly, you are not prolonging those contracts, but on the other hand, you're arguing that you believe that there's a place for swing plants in the market and that the value, and thus prices or spread that should or must be achieved by those would rise. Wouldn't that be an argument to keep the STEAG plants?
Ingo, I think that the argument is absolutely correct. However, you do need plants who have that swing capacity. That means that ramping up and ramping down can be done relatively quickly. And that is better done with new plants. These are relatively old plants. So I'm a little bit skeptical whether they would really qualify for that.
I think with regard to the first question, what is the split between something which comes online before 2013 and after 2013? We can't precisely say what it is. So let's take a ballpark figure that 60-40%, so 60% is within 2013 and 40% afterwards. Yeah. That's the ballpark figure.
That would be on a 25 billion total figure. 40% of that.
Yeah, but don't take it too. We have to dive deeper into that.
Mm.
Well, so far, you know, with the CapEx figures, we only specified for the next 3 years, and they were 15 billion.
18.
18, right? I'm sorry, 18 billion. Yeah, right, 18. So I think your question is a bit hypothetical, but I think Stefan's guesstimate is okay. 60-40.
Okay.
And all your cost cutting is in your 13 guidance?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The next question, please.
Thank you. Thank you. The next question comes from Martin Charles Young from Nomura.
Yeah, good afternoon to everybody. A couple of questions. The first is to revisit your thinking around the dividend. If we skip back to last year, we saw E.ON actually put a dividend floor in place for the next couple of years. I guess a lot of people were expecting you to do the same. Clearly, you haven't. Did you avoid doing this because the outlook for the next few years is so uncertain and the balance sheet so stretched you felt that you couldn't do it, or is there another reason? And then secondly, picking up on Jürgen's comments earlier about your preference for markets that are wholly competitive and not having, shall we say, distorting price mechanisms in them, the UK, of course, is going down the route of putting in place new pricing mechanisms, which ultimately will mean that a significant proportion of UK generation capacity will be priced according to some kind of contract, for want of a better expression. Does that mean the UK is not a market that you would be actively looking to participate in over the longer term? And if so, is it possible to think about RWM Power no longer being as strategic to the group as perhaps it was in the past? Thanks.
Well, Martin, thank you for both those questions. As to dividend, no, we are not jittery and uncertain about our future results. It's just that we believe that the dividend should reflect the earnings of the past year. So we always think that it's much fairer to say that we're basing it on the recurrent net earnings, and we stick to our corridor. And within that corridor, we have some flexibility. And when you really calculate what we're doing at the moment, we are, even though we say 50 to 60%, we're at 49 point some percent payout ratio. So we believe that a floor dividend, is not really suitable for a risk paper like a share. And therefore, you know, then you're at a fixed dividend. So we don't believe that that concept is right. We believe that we have, my good friend Stefan tells me I should also mention to you that we have threefold financial targets. That is, you know, the attractive dividend, the leverage, and the CapEx that we want to maintain. So we need money to finance that. So I do think that is fair. As to the second question, Rolf, do you want to say that or?
I think, Martin, that is a too general conclusion out of that, what we have told you. I think it is much more general comment that we do believe that market forces are a better place and a better scheme to achieve efficient supply of power to an overall economy in comparison to a capacity market. But, of course, we are on the other side following closely the political debate in the various countries in which we are in. And, of course, longer term, it has also an impact on our preference where to make additional capex available. But this is really a longer term development.
Yeah. But Martin, it's not fair to construct our desire to leave the British market there. In fact, what we are trying to do is not only following the discussion, but shaping the discussion. I've had a meeting with Chris Yoon, and he promised me there would be other meetings so that we can try to influence his policies, because we still believe, and you know, even some of the misdevelopments in Germany show this, the market is the best guideline. And whenever you start distorting the market, the consequences are grave and sometimes not the intended consequences.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Deborah Wilkins from Goldman Sachs.
Deborah?
Yes. Hi, good afternoon. Could you help us understand the development at DEA, where it appears the CapEx has been increased, but the profit targets have been delayed somewhat? And then, separately from DEA, in your 13 guidance, is your effective carbon cost the same as the 16 euro market price, or are you benefiting from your early action on CDMJI, and if so, what is the actual average achieved carbon cost in that 13 guidance?
Deborah, with respect to the last one, that will not be disclosed. Please understand this. The figure we mentioned is the assumption for the uncovered position with respect to CO2, and you rightly reminded us that we have some coverage out of the CDMJI as well as from some pre-purchases of CO2 certificates. But that will not be disclosed, what will be the average cost.
Yeah, and as to your first question, Deborah, I was trying to, maybe not in a very clear way, alluding to that in my statement. Sometimes you have strange things happening. In Norway, in two instances, we found a lot more than we initially were looking for. So the capex will be higher, and the well comes on in production a little later, but the total profit will be a lot higher. So there are quite a number of uncertainties in the DEA projections in the longer term, not the least being the oil price, which, you know, we cannot hedge at this time. For that long a period, we can't hedge it anyway. And therefore, there is we are on a conservative way saying there is a 1 billion profit contribution from DEA by 16.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. You. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Lueder Schumacher from UniCredit Group.
Good afternoon. Two questions. One is on the nuclear fuel tax. I'm not quite sure if I forgot the number you mentioned earlier, but could you just confirm what impact you expect in 2011 and whether that's the same kind of level we should assume going forward from there for 12, 13, etc. The second question is on the German generation market and all the capacity cuts, if we are going to see them. What kind of capacity cuts would be needed to get at least some form of tightness back into the market, which would at least allow for rising coal prices to feed through into the power price?
Well, Lueder, that's interesting. Now, the first, as to the nuclear fuels tax, we all know that the government even knows that we will try to take legal action against that fuels tax. So whatever we say now is just, so to say, worst case for us. And as you know, that we have already replaced some of the fuel elements in one of our power stations so that we don't have to do it too soon next year. But we figured in 400 million for the 11 figures in nuclear fuel stacks. As to the, let's say, a redundant capacity, there is approximately 10 gigawatts of inflexible hard coal capacity, and of those only two, just a little above two, are presently earmarked for closure. So that's why an additional 8,000 megawatts are needed to be identified according to our calculations.
With respect to the nuclear fuel tax in the following years, that is in the 600 to 700 million region a year. It is not exactly the same figure in each and every year because it really depends on the nuclear fuel
exchange rhythm of the
exchange element. Rhythm cycle, I think the technical that's right word, the cycle. And in so far, on average, we expect for the 6 years 607 million. This year it is a significantly lower number, roughly 400 million.
Okay, that's very clear. And just on the capacity question, so you reckon that if we've got some 8 to 10 gigawatts of capacity removed, this will be enough to for Titanus to get back into the market?
Let me say it's a moving target, that's the problem, because it depends on how much renewables come to the system over the next years. So what we have seen this year, 7 gigs more, probably next year another 5 gigs more, we don't know yet. So we can't especially say it's 10 gigawatt or 12 or 8. It's unfortunately a moving target.
But renewables are mainly excluded from the reliably available capacity anyway, so it shouldn't really have that much of an impact on that, shouldn't it?
No, it does have an impact because the operating hours for the swing capacity become less and the demand on flexibility becomes higher. So some of the old plants just can't cope with that. Just imagine what it does to your boiler. When your boiler is not made for these temperature changes, you're ruining it in a very short time, and that can be very costly.
And your question meter stands already at 4, so two more than you allowed.
That's Lüder Schumacher, yes, there's special rules.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Alexander Karnik from Deutsche Bank.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. Just to follow on the question on market tightness, in on page 14, obviously you've given a lot of numbers. What is the net closure scenario, the net closure number that I would derive if I put all these figures together? Because the difficulty obviously is here that you're saying 13.5 is going to come on stream, but replacing most of that is replacing old capacity. That's my first question.
Well, Alex, you can just add the 2 gigawatts and the 2.2. That's 4.2.
Okay. That's what I thought. Thanks very much. And that's not sufficient to bring market back in tightness, you said?
No, according to our considerations, no.
Okay. Thank you very much. And the other question I got a
bit... That is question number 3 now.
Two and a half. Thank you very much. It's just on the legal action against the fuel tax. Where is your status quo on that? Like, when can we expect something visible to be announced? Or?
Well, Alex, this is a political question. Of course, that will cause another outcry in the German press, but we are lucky because you can only object against a tax decree that you have received, and we'll be the last one to receive one, so we will see what our three competitors will have done by that time. Can we postpone this question until that has happened?
Absolutely. Thank you very much, all.
You're welcome. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Lawson Steele from Espirito Santo Investment Bank.
Oh, hi, good afternoon, everybody. I wonder if I could just press you a little bit on a couple of things. We all talk about 3.0 times debt target. Is that the de minimis level you need? In other words, presumably you'd actually want some headroom, wouldn't you, and therefore want to be below that, and tied in with that, what exactly is medium term in your book? Second question, I know you don't want to talk about it very much, but see if I can press you a little bit to give us some sense of what's going on. On the 8 billion asset disposal, can you give us a sense of perhaps geographically where, without being too ambiguous?
Oh, yeah.
That's a nice try.
Well, roughly. And also give us a bit of the timing. But also I'm interested in the rationale behind this. Did you look at the balance sheet and say, you know what, we need to get rid of 8 billion? Or have you actually come through and gone through asset by asset so that we can actually dispose of these? Thank you.
With respect to the leverage factor, I think it's fair to remember that the credit rating agencies have slightly different metrics how to calculate what is sufficient. And in addition to that, it's not only the metrics, but there are also a lot of qualitative arguments. For example, what is the diversification of the overall business portfolio? What is the share of regulated business compared to the unregulated business, and so on? So the 3.0, which we established, is a kind of communication tool within the company and to the investment world, what we think is consistent with a solid A rating. And we want to defend this, but as I mentioned, we expect that in 2011 we will surpass that figure, and the overall strategy which we have outlined today to you today is also striving for coming back midterm below the 3.0. So that is the overall rationale for that.
Lawson, as to the 8 billion, we've arrived at that number on a variety of courses. First, we looked at, you know, what we have in areas that don't hurt us, that are maybe non-core, and I don't want to mention them here, but one could be the Berlin water business and some others also that are really not so decisive for what we need. And the rest, I think, you look at our need for capital. We said we want to continue our investment into renewables, and we want to continue our investment into upstream, and we do want to participate in some growth markets, and we need to finish the CapEx programs that we are currently doing. And when you put all this into a big picture, you see that there is a total of about 8 billion necessary. And of those, I think we have identified three. Five need to be identified. But that, again, it's a moving target. And if the future comes out a little better, it may not need to be precisely 8 billion.
Sorry, in terms of timing?
No, well, first then you were asking for the geography. I can be very precise on that. It's all on planet Earth.
Yeah, well, that's why I put in the caveat of not being ambiguous, but thank you.
time is until 13, yeah, we said that.
Okay, but you can't give us any indication of whether we can expect the bulk of it this year or next year.
Well, you can see us running up to that target until 13.
Yeah. I think your meter is already at 4.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Benjamin Lair from Exane BNP Paribas.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. One question, please, on the 2012 guidance. You mentioned in your report that operating results should be down in 2012 versus 2011. Can you provide us with a reasonable range of how much further down this will go compared to 2011? And the second question, please, is are you assuming in your 2013 guidance some recovery of past losses on the gas midstream business? Thank you.
I didn't get quite the last question. Could you repeat this, please?
Yes, I wonder if you are assuming some positive contribution due to some recovery or compensation for past losses in 2010-2011 into your 2013 earnings contribution of the gas midstream division.
Thank you. That's well understood. Yes, we do. And with respect to 2012, we intentionally are not more precise than in the annual report. It's simply for German regulatory reasons that we have to make a comment on 2012 at all, and we decided for this qualitative statement only.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Christopher Copeland from Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. One more time, first, asset disposals. Just wondered, you just said you may find some non-core assets or some of them you have already identified, but are you saying to us that more than 10% of your EBITDA can be found in non-core assets? I wonder how you feel about telling us we're looking at your map here in your presentation, where pretty much, at least the message that I'm getting is you are very happy with the businesses that you have. I just wonder whether you can put those two messages into context. Secondly, again on asset disposals, you're effectively telling us you're losing 1 billion of EBITDA. So are you feeling confident about achieving an 8x 2013 EBITDA multiple in your disposals?
As to the latter, Chris, yes, I do think we feel comfortable achieving that 8x because some is a business that is in different areas. It's regulated. It's not as risky and so on. The second one. I think we're looking at a variety of measures. There is some interest in participating, you know, by external investors in participating in some of our big CapEx projects, you know, buying into newly built power stations. You know, let's say you're a gas supplier and you see that we have CCGTs almost being finished in Great Britain, so there may be an interest in buying into that. There is some interest in buying into German lignite and so on. And I think for those, you can, those are definitely core assets, but we don't have to own 100% of those. And for those, I think you can get the 8 multiple. So I think it adds up, Chris.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tanja Markloff from Commerzbank.
Yeah, good afternoon. I have two questions. One is on the coal-fired power production plants that you have under contract. So apart from the 1.4 gigawatts that will be dissolved by the end of 2012, I see that you have about 5.4 additional gigawatts under contract with other players. And I'd be interested in how flexible you are with these capacities, if you can withdraw easily from these contracts and or if they are due to expire soon. And the second question is on the nuclear power investment needs. Do you have clear visibility, meanwhile, how much of additional investments the government might ask you for related to the lifetime prolongation?
I'll start with the first question. I think you should have in mind that this is really a portfolio of contracts which have different expiry dates, different opportunities for an extension, and also that these power stations have different efficiency factors. So really on a case-by-case situation, we have to evaluate the merits of extending a contract or simply not. And that is exactly what happened in December last year, where we decided not to work on further extension of some of these contracts.
Okay, thank you.
With respect to your second question, we have spent in DPSA for 2011 a triple-digit million euro amount, and we are now in discussions what is the capex amount which can we book on, let's say, the pot for the lifetime extension. That hasn't been clarified yet, and we have to talk to the government and also to accountants here. But part of that is for additional security measures already.
I will be with the new Prime Minister of Hesse, Mr. Bouffier, and his environmental minister on Monday to talk about the needs to for Biblis. Biblis is the main target of our investment over the next years, because Biblis A and B would have been the two stations to be closed earliest. So here, more there is more investment need than in Gundremmingen or Lingen.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Vincent de Blic from JP Morgan.
Yes, good afternoon. Two questions. The first one, could you just clarify, please, Dr. Polig, what you said on the dividend? Do you intend to pay the dividend in shares or just give this option to shareholders, basically? That's the first one. And the second one, on CapEx, I was just wondering whether the number you put for 2013 for Germany, so 900 for sales and distribution and 400 for generation, is a sustainable level, or would it have to go up in the following years just because of some potential works being pushed back? And also, if you could tell us how much you include precisely for nuclear lifetime extensions in these years. Thank you.
I'm not quite sure whether I got fully the last question, but with respect to the first question, no, what I said is simply that we will ask the upcoming AGM for an amendment to the corporate charter so that in future the AGM may decide about a dividend in kind. But we also said that we have to further analyze what could be, especially under tax, under German tax law, be the benefits of that. So that is totally open from today, but we want to enlarge our toolbox, and for that very reason we will ask the AGM to amend the bylaws.
So it would be an option, not necessarily mandatory?
Yeah. Okay. That is what we are looking for.
But of course it needs to be attractive for the shareholder to select the scrip dividend.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The second question was about the CapEx long-term for generation in Germany, I think. Was that right, Vincent?
Yes. I mean, basically, your 1.3 for Germany. Is it a sustainable number, or is there upwards pressure in the longer term, basically?
Oh, it goes down.
It goes down.
It goes down. For Germany, I think in the thermal portfolio, there is no more hard coal, there is only replacement in lignite, and that is not quite clear because the outdated 150 megawatt blocks are out, and the 300s and the 600s can stay in. We're just modernizing the 600s, so there's just a question what we're going to do with the 300s. But there may be another CCGT somewhere in Central Europe. It doesn't really matter whether it's Germany or elsewhere. If our new commissioner, Mr. Oettinger, is right with Europe becoming the copper plate, that may be a CCGT in Czechia rather than in Germany.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Andreas Thielen from MainFirst Bank.
Yes, good afternoon. Firstly, on page 13 of the presentation, you talk about the swing capacity becoming more important going forward. Could you share with us some ideas on the profitability of this business and what you see is your possible share in that, or how your share could develop in that? And secondly, are you willing to give us a figure on the costs related to the additional restructuring or savings measures?
I think with a step with respect to page 13, what we simply are telling the market here is that there is demand for swing capacity and that the existing fleet can cope to some extent with that need, but that it is questionable whether by 2020 the existing fleet in the country overall will cover that. We are not making the argument that this is a specific business for ourselves here.
Okay. I'm not sure if we got your second question right. Can you just repeat it?
Yeah, just very simply, the additional 200 million savings.
The cost saving,
what are the
stepping
costs related
up our
to that?
Efficiency enhancement from 1.2 to 1.4. But we already answered that. That was IT.
No, I think the question, what are there any significant implementation costs for that? Wasn't
no.
It?
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Okay.
Nothing
great
to talk about.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Patrick Hummer from UBS Investment.
Yes. We're coming back again to the round?
Patrick, yeah.
If I may.
Yes.
Love sweet the second time around.
Thank you. Yeah, first one, basically a follow-up on cost-cutting. I mean, there is nothing incremental in 2013. Is that because you're still working on future savings to come, or is it basically as good as it can get for the time being on the cost side? That will be the first part.
Patrick, let's talk about this once we get there. It's you know, if we want to realize our 1.4 billion 2006 compared to 2012, that's quite an ambitious goal. And of course, you know, you can comb a dog 10 times and you still have dog's hair in your comb. You can groom it that long. So we have to look for a new dog groomer after 12.
Okay, fine. And the second one, if I may, just on the reserve margin discussion we had so far on this call, just taking the thermal additions, the new CCGT that comes on stream in Central Europe, we're going to see a reserve margin expansion probably in the near term. That's fairly visible, even though, of course, renewables are the big unknown. But even if renewables go down, it's not going to be a tightening of the reserve margin. That's quite visible. And then you identified 10 gigawatts of potential closures, old hard coal stations, moving the reserve margin maybe to around 20% or to the high teens. Do you really think that is a game changer for the threats you can achieve in a baseload environment?
I'm not sure if we got the question really right, because first of all, what we intend to say here on page 14 was a specific situation in the German market with the renewables. And now you open up more to the European level and the reserve margin in Europe. I think we have to be very careful to add up only gigawatts plus gigawatts, because reserve margin, you have to really look into what is calculated, how reliable are the renewables there, and so on and so forth. What we're saying here is Germany needs more flexible conventional capacity.
I was actually not referring to that. I was more looking at the bigger picture, because you say the threat environment is actually not sustainable. I see that point, but the question is just if we see 10 gigawatts of old hard coal stations disappearing from the system, if that will already be enough, not just to make money with more flexible new thermal stations, but also in general, if that's enough for an expansion of thermal threats on base loads.
As I think we're coming back to what we talked with Lüder about. It's a moving target. Yeah, you don't know yet, and it's also not in our hands to decide that. So
only to give you a little bit more flavor on that. The other week we had an intense debate here internally about the interconnection between adjacent markets and the issue that low wind production in Germany would also affect the Netherlands and most likely the UK, because this is one meteorological region. And insofar, the alliance of some countries on potential imports from other countries may not work out to the extent that we have the same meteorological situation for some time over a region. That happened already early last year. We mentioned that we had relatively low wind production, which cost us some money, but that was a phenomenon not only in Germany, but also in the Netherlands and also in the UK. So it is a much more challenging debate than the simple question you just asked.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Alberto Ponti from Societe Generale.
Yeah, good afternoon. Just have one quick question. What CO2 prices or power prices or oil prices would be an impediment for you to achieve the 3x net debt EBITDA in 2013? Thank you.
Oh, Alberto, this is I should always be very suspicious when you talk about a quick question. This is a highly complex question, and I don't think it deserves a quick answer. I mean, there's a lot of assumptions that have to go into this. I mean, I'm at loss. Well, if you're an experienced man, you know this.
But unfortunately, This world is not such a simple spreadsheet where you can give one input and then get the break-even figure for another one. Unfortunately, that is not that simple. Sorry for that. Our business is a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to dinner again in Chicago, Alberto.
Surely, I'm picking up the offer, yes.
Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Deborah Wilkins from Goldman Sachs.
Sorry, I'm coming back with a couple. Quick, these are relatively quick. You have given us the guidance of the earnings dilution from disposals. Does the CapEx reduction also reflect the disposal plans?
Yes.
And then
yes.
So the CapEx reduction reflects the planned disposals?
Yeah.
Okay. And then I think something that we're all struggling with is, you know, you mentioned the positive impacts of the new build plant, the many plants that you currently have under construction. What is, you know, in your 13 guidance, what's your output? What are you expecting in terms of the impact from the net add in your forecast?
Well, that is one of our weak points, Deborah, because that impact in 13 is still relatively limited, because we're still in some ramp-up period with the two hard coal plants, and the CCGTs in Britain will be producing. For that year, part of that year, the lignite plant will be producing. So the full impact of the new build is only after 13. I would say about 40% of the impact is in 13.
I think you know our CapEx plan. So what is 13 most likely?
If I look at the chart on page 54, it seems to imply that everything is online except for two plants in 13.
Yeah, besides NSAF, everything should be online then, yeah. Martin reminds me, we are just talking about power plants. We have to keep in mind also energy and their CapEx programs here. So they have also an impact on our 2013 guidance.
On page 55, you can see that in 2013, we have Markinj only for some parts of the year, Nordsee Ost only for some parts of the year, and Guinty Moor only for the first full year in 2015. And these are also, as you can see, major investments. And the DEA fields on page 56 gives you even the picture that only in 2015 or even in 2016 you have the full usage of all that capital spent.
Okay,
thank you.
You're welcome. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Franck Batay from Crédit Agricole.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation. Just a quick question, if I may. Could you be more precise on your rating target? In the presentation, you are talking about solid single A. In the report, you are mentioning single A. I ask a question because between the flat single A that you have today and A minus, we talk about significant financial leeway. So if a rating agency don't want to wait and that you implement the asset disposal and that they decide to cut your rating to a minus, is it something that you can live with, or will you consider then additional financial conservation measures?
No, actually we are looking for an A flat rating. But I think, as already mentioned, we will at least for some time have a leverage factor which is above the 3.0 level, which we think is consistent with an A-flat rating. On the other side, we have presented to yourself, and we will present in even more detail the credit rating agencies, the plan to come back, to come down below the 3.0 once again. But that needs some time. As we mentioned several times, we were really here on the peak of an investment cycle. And CapEx will come down quite naturally, as we just mentioned, with all the big power plant projects then being finalized over the next 2 years or so. So we will need some time, and hopefully the credit rating agency will give us some time, but ultimately it's a goal to come back midterm to an A-flat rating.
So to use your metaphor, Frank, of course you ask, can you live with it? Of course, we can live with an A-minus for a year or two, but we don't want to live with it forever and want to come back to the flat A.
Thank you very much.
In case we would be downgraded.
Yes, in case. But but we won't commit suicide if we are downgraded.
Thank you very much. Very clear. Thank
you're welcome. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Andreas Thielen from MainFirst Bank.
Yeah, just one follow-up on the investment program. How confident are you on the Nordsee Ost investment? I mean, we hear all the time about the difficulties and problems of offshore wind in Germany. Is that going to go ahead at that size in any case, or is there a chance for revisions going forward?
No, I think we're very confident. Let me compare that with callback actions. You know, if Toyota calls back cars, then it doesn't mean if you ordered a Mercedes that your Mercedes is also not working. So we think we ordered the Mercedes and not the Toyota in this case.
Okay, thanks.
Don't quote us now.
No, actually, Georg Marienhütte is a supplier of steel to Toyota gearboxes in Dresden.
Oh my God!
I should take different. I should say if Hyundai takes calls back cars and you ordered an Audi, then you're not affected.
Don't worry, I make no quotes on that.
Thank you.
Okay, next question.
Thank you. The next question comes from Lüder Schumacher from UniCredit Group.
Just one more very simple question. One thing I don't quite understand is how the disposals would actually help you with the rating agencies. Presumably, if you're selling assets at 8x EV/EBITDA, that would be great, but of course you only get this kind of price for quality assets. So if you sell those, the overall earnings quality of the group will also be diluted, which presumably won't be lost on the rating agency. So how does this actually help you with your ratings target?
I think you have exactly described the evaluation process which we will have here to do to ensure that we target the right assets for disposals. But for example, we have minority stakes where the impact is different to that what you just mentioned. And as Jürgen mentioned before, we can invite other people to partner up in certain projects which we have underway. So it is not that simple, straightforward that we take one asset, dispose of that. And of course, then we have the issue that also EBITDA would be lost. It's in so far a little bit more difficult and challenging process.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I told you it was a simple question.
And a simple answer. I would like to call the last two questions from people out there. So, next question, please.
Thank you. Next question is from Mr. Mark Whitfield from Credit Suisse.
Yeah, good afternoon. Hi.
Hi,
Mark.
Hi there. Just one question from me. Sorry to go back to the capacity cuts slide on page 14, but I think it's pretty important because, as Vincent said earlier, you have been pretty vocal about this point. In terms of cutting, you know, the 10 gigawatts, or let's just assume it's 10 gigawatts of capacity, I mean, you talk about a tighter market. Can you give us some sort of sense of where margins or clean dark or clean spark spreads would need to be for you to be sufficiently happy that the capacity cuts had had or taken the right effect? And if they hadn't, would you be prepared to take out more capacity?
Well, of course, I mean, your spreads are different for gas, lignite, and hard coal. Lignite is at cost, but our estimate is approximately 10 euros per megawatt hour.
And may I take the opportunity to clarify something totally different? I just got the information that some people understood that we are already proposing a scrip dividend for 2010. That is not the case. The only thing what we are doing is that we will ask the AGM to amend the bylaws of the company so that in future years the AGM may then decide so. So this year there is no scrip dividend, it's simply 3.50 per share in cash to avoid any misunderstanding.
Okay, Mark, thanks.
Is that understood?
Yeah, sorry. Just in terms of my second part of my question was, you know, if it doesn't have the price response, the tightness you were referring to, would you be prepared to be more aggressive in terms of cutting capacity?
Well, I mean, we would not keep anything in the market that is not feasible. So let's decide this once we get there.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, last but not least.
Thank you. The last question is from Ashley Thomas from MF Global.
Thank you. One question on the leverage issue. It looks like Fitch will drop the equity contribution from hybrids. So my question is, on your current planning, are you still assuming the 50% equity contribution from your existing hybrid?
Yeah, that we are doing. And as you know, we are rated by Standard & Poor's and Moody's. And what we learned from them is that there is a 50% equity credit from the hybrid we issued last year.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks to you all. With this, I would like to finish the conference call. Whatever question might be left, give us a call here.
Send us a mail, that's also working.
Oh, you're going to mail.
And you know that we have here in the Investor Relations Department 7 days a week, 24-hour service.
Thanks for that, Rolf. Okay, see you soon on our roadshow tours. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.